fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we have a very special guest and a very timely topic, Ben Brancel, the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, who is in Wausau tonight to discuss how farmers can tap into global markets for their products and hopefully create jobs in the process. Now, immediately following this program, Secretary Ben Brancel will give a free public presentation on that topic here at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement. That's at 625 Stewart Avenue on Wausau's west side. It is an appearance that's sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, Centergy, and the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. We'll also be discussing other topics of interest to the agriculture community, including the effects of this summer's drought on the state's farm economy, the land use debates that sometimes pit farmers against homeowners, the vanishing small family farm, and the challenge of getting young people interested in a career in farming, also the push for locally produced food products. We've got two terrific guests joining Secretary Brancel in our studio. Don Ratke is the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence. That's an institution that developed out of earlier discussions for the Dairyland State Academy. And also Tim Butke, an agricultural loan expert who has helped out many family farmers. Mr. Butke is the Senior Business Relations Manager with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank in Wausau. We invite you to join the conversation. If you want to give us a call earlier in the program, it's usually easier to get you on. The phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Well, let's start by introducing our guest. Secretary Ben Brancel is a fifth-generation farmer who managed a dairy operation for 22 years. He now raises beef cattle on his 290-acre family farm. He served in the Wisconsin Assembly from 1986 to 1997, served as Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection under former Governor Tommy Thompson in 1997. Then in 2001, he served as the Wisconsin State Director of the U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Services Agency, and now he is back as Agriculture Secretary under Governor Walker. Ben Brancel, farming is in your blood.
Yeah, thank you. Agriculture runs deep in our family.
What are the top priorities with your state agency right now, especially during these trying economic times?
Well, of course, our focus changes as events bring them to us, and certainly the drought this year in much of Wisconsin has taken a lot of attention. We put a lot of effort into how to help, and in some cases it is not direct help, but it is give guidance to the farm community of what help is out there and available. International trade has been a very strong component of our department for many years, and as the landscape and the world changes, we have to change as well. And I'll talk a little bit on your program about some of the guests that we've had in our state from around the world that are very concerned because they read our reports about drought.
Fantastic. Let's move on to Don Ratke. Don, you're the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence. And for the city slickers in our audience, why don't you tell us what a herdsman is?
I actually run the farm for the technical college. I do the day-to-day operations, make the decisions on when we cut feed, cut our hay, put our corn up, which cows to treat for mastitis, anything that has to do with managing the herd and heifers or whatever, I'm in charge of that for the technical college.
Now, are you actually teaching there?
I do not specifically teach, but I do, I guess what I call teachable moments. Anything I see when we're out doing anything with the animals that would be of interest to the students, I know the instructors well enough that I can go talk to the instructors, and they'll usually bring the students out to see certain things. We've had cows that have had left EAs, twisted stomachs at the farm, and the students get to come out and watch the vet on what they do and performing the surgery and stuff like that. So try to give them as much hands-on experience as we possibly can. I know talking with the students that were first-year students last year at the end of the semester, they did like the hands-on, and they wanted more of it. So we try to do as much as what we can, and I think that's what makes our farm a little bit unique from that around the state. We're the only technical college that has an actual live working farm that students go to.
Well, tell us a little bit about this Ag Center for Excellence and how it evolved out of the push for the Dairyland State Academy.
The Ag Center of Excellence actually was started by a group of producers and agribusiness people that formed an entity called the Dairyland State Academy. When Dr. Weyers, the president of North Central Technical College, came to be the president, they went to her saying they wanted some more ag programs and stuff of that. Knowing what her background was, her husband owns an equipment dealership. She was very receptive to it.
So she already knew something about the agriculture economy.
She knew the ag economy. She knew a little bit about agriculture, how it works. And the cost of educating people in agriculture is a little bit higher than your normal education. But there, too, we were fortunate that we had people on our county board, Marathon County Board, that were willing to put money toward it. So the Marathon County Board of Directors did put $1 million to purchase the farm we're at now, which is just north of Wausau on County K. They purchased 110 acres from John and Sue Rocco.
Right.
Of that 110 acres or 70 that's tillable, we do rent an additional 13 acres from John and Sue, and we also have a 35-acre maple woods on that property that we're looking at tapping into trees on and using that as a business model for some of our students and as a fundraiser for
wow.
PAS club at the school.
You can sell maple syrup.
Right.
How many students do you have?
Right now, between first and second year students are running between 100 and 120 that are actually going to be going to the school on a regular basis. It's hard to tell with the continuing education that we have, depending upon what things come up that we see the school sees a need for, that they'll do. So to give a direct number for sure, it's really hard kind of to pin that down.
Are most of these young people, are most of them interested in starting their own farms, or are they looking to work for somebody else?
It's kind of interesting. You see a lot of young students come in, it's about half and half female, but most of them don't have an ag background, haven't been around cattle. So when we get them out in the barn, we have to teach them, you know, how to work with cattle, how to move cattle. We're teaching them how to vaccinate, things like that that they've never done before. But we have the ability to give them the hands-on experience that they're going to need. As if they're going to buy their own farms, the cost of it, it's kind of prohibitive. Not saying that none of them will, but I think we're working on students that we're going to specialize to either be a herdsperson someplace or work at a calf nursery.
All right.
And, you know, so they can specialize more. And we're hoping that we can kind of point those students in a direction that would fit them better. An example, what we would always give is if they're supposed to be working with fresh cows and watching the fresh cows, and we get a student that comes in and says, well, what about this cow over here because she doesn't look right? That's the kind of person that a lot of the herds around the area and around the state would want because they're paying attention, yes, to the cow that they're supposed to be, but they're also paying attention to what else is going on in the barn. Same thing if they're working with the calves. If you're walking through the calf barn and a calf starts coughing and sneezing, if they keep walking, well, they're not paying attention. But if they're stopping and looking, why is it? You know, she got a snotty nose, her eyes don't look right. The little things that make the big difference. You know, you get the person that can walk past that cow and she looks kind of cross-eyed at him. They stop and they look, and why is she doing that?
So you're, teaching them to pay attention, and when they get out of this program, our ag economy in central Wisconsin is enough to find good jobs for these folks?
There are a lot of jobs like that. Now, I wouldn't go as far as say that we're teaching them the skills, but if they show that they have the skills, we're helping to hone them and make them better.
Got it. Let's move to our third guest, farm loan expert Tim Butke. He's the Senior Business Relations Manager for Mid-Wisconsin State Bank. Tim, you've been doing this for a long time. Is there any such thing as a typical farm loan?
Boy, not anymore. Not anymore, Glenn. We deal with farmers anywhere from like 18 cows up to 1,800 cows at this point. And really, commodity farmers are becoming more the norm up here in north central Wisconsin because of the price that commodities are bringing, corn, beans, et cetera. A lot more just going into crop raising.
What do farmers usually need money for?
Buying real estate, operating loans, purchasing tractors, cows, any number of things.
You've seen a lot. You know, I've known you for 20 years. How long have you been doing this?
I've been lending money now for 18 years. I'm
okay.
A former dairy producer, so I've been on both sides of the table.
And is it harder to get agriculture loans these days with the tight credit that a lot of banks have following the shock that we had to the banking industry back in 2008?
I think it's fair to say that we scrutinize things a lot more closely, perhaps, than what we did, say, up through 2008. It definitely has gotten tighter to that extent. Mm-hmm. 2009 was really devastating to agriculture in Wisconsin. Typical dairy farm lost about $1,000 a cow. So if you figure a 1,000-cow herd, that's $1 million to lose in 1 year. That's huge.
That's
you
lot
don't
of
overcome
money.
That. And actually, we're still trying to rebound from that. 2011 was a decent year financially. This year's looking okay, and the milk futures price going into the latter part of this year is looks pretty strong.
Anybody have any idea how many farmers went out of business? Secretary Bransel, maybe you've got a handle on that following the following the economic collapse we had in 2008?
Well, we keep track of the number of dairy licenses that we have, but I'll go back clear to the early 1900s. We had 130,000 farms, and if you take a historical look, there's been a gradual reduction, and this is dairy farms. There has been a gradual reduction of dairy farms every year over that historical period. Sometimes they're up a little bit, the number that are leaving or exiting the mm-hmm. dairy industry. Sometimes they're a little less as far as the number that are leaving the dairy industry. But I don't believe you can say that one single event has caused a dramatic change in the number of farms. Every year it's a weather-related issue. It's a market-related issue. It's the cost of money issue. It's the increase in input issue. So each year,
it's a tough business, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, oh yes, very much so. You have to manage what you're doing and be good at doing it. And you have to be very, very resilient and flexible. And so each one of these components of the farming industry has had a major impact on farms different years at different times. So you can't say that one particular situation really caused a real demise in the dairy industry.
Well, Ben Bransel, your talk today is entitled Central Wisconsin Agriculture, Tapping into Global Markets for Jobs. And for those who have just tuned in, Secretary Ben Bransel, a Secretary of Agriculture in our state, is speaking right after this show. It's at 6 o'clock at a free public forum here at the Center for Civic Engagement. That's at 625 Stewart Avenue, the corner of 7th Avenue and Stewart Avenue on Wausau's west side. Ben, what are people going to hear? What are you going to be saying today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about ginseng and remind them how important that particular crop is in this area. It's very unique to Marathon County. Marathon County, believe it or not, when you go to the Asias, and you talk about Wausau, they go, huh? When you talk about Marathon County, they go, oh, that's the place we get our ginseng
right.
from. It is a very high-valued crop in the Asian communities. It's hard to explain, but taking a few roots of ginseng as a gift to somebody is about the biggest and best gift they could ever receive.
Well, I was actually assigned a couple of years ago to do a story on ginseng in Wisconsin by National Public Radio, who heard about all of these Chinese buyers flying into Marathon County, the central Wisconsin, and you know, it piqued their interest. So we've really got something special here with our ginseng industry.
Yeah, very, very special. And then the dairy industry, of course, has taken a larger step into the international marketplace. And in some countries, it's cheese. In other countries, they can't handle cheese. They don't have the infrastructure, the coolers and the refrigerators. But they're very interested in food ingredients and items that could be added to water or other kinds of things to make food mm-hmm. that are – and whey, lactose are two of the ingredients that are really starting to take a very – bigger portion of look in the Asian communities.
Now we've talked about touched briefly on how hard a life farmers have and how many farms have disappeared in this state over the past 100 years. Is there some reason for optimism and hope with this global marketplace?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because our farms in Wisconsin are not totally dependent on one type of marketplace. And they keep expanding those markets. Of course, ethanol plants are new even though we have some that have been around for a while. That was a new outlet for our corn farmers.
Mm-hmm.
The soybean industry has found identity preserved soybeans as being an option. We have people that are now growing crops specifically for local needs through community-supported agriculture or farmers markets, and that becomes a very niche market focus. There is always opportunity. If you think you're going to farm the same way in 20 years that you farm today, selling your product the same way you sold it 20 years ago, then you're going to lose out and you're going to miss opportunities. And we have a very, very aggressive agriculture community always looking for a new way to market the products that are created here in the state of Wisconsin.
Don Radke, are you at the Ag Center? Are you turning people on to the implications of a global economy?
I don't know if they're teaching so much on the global economy part about it, but I think most people are aware of 15% of the dairy products that are produced here in the United States are exported. And, you know, we always talk that import-export thing is kind of a negative thing, but I think we need to keep exporting more of what we produce because there are those countries out there that want those products, but they're different than what they were 20 years ago, like Ben said. This whey protein thing has just really started, and I think, you know, years ago that whey protein product, they just spread it back on the field as fertilizer. They'd feed it back to hogs and stuff, whereas now they're turning it into a value-added product that we as producers can make money on. So it changes as we go.
And Tim, farmers you talk to, are they tuned into the fact that there might be some opportunities in a global marketplace?
I think so. I think they look at stuff more locally, you know, of course, to try and market their product. And I think most of them realize that's about half the battle today. Most of them are very good producers. If they're still in agriculture today, they generally have that part right. It's the marketing piece that scares a lot of them, though.
Right.
They don't have the background. They think there's somebody with a crystal ball in Chicago that's controlling prices, and you know, you hear all kinds of theories, frankly, as to why things are the way they are. But, you talk through those things, and, you know, just today I was at two dairy farms, and in both cases we talked about the opportunity to lock in some milk prices as they're ratcheting up here, at least putting a floor under their price. So it's always being discussed.
Well, what can you say to farmers and producers, people who market and change agricultural products, these folks who may be overwhelmed by the thought of doing business overseas?
Well, our international trade unit is very focused on small and middle-sized businesses. We will help individual farmers if there is a niche for the products they create. Oftentimes, it's trying to aggregate, that's put together, their product along with other farmers that are creating a similar product that then can enter the international marketplace. We don't worry about Tyson. We don't worry about Cargill, ADM. They can do.
They know
own.
What they're doing.
Oh, they have plenty of resources available in the international marketplace. It's the smaller company that's accessing it for the first time. And some of these policies that are out there, the different requirements, the certification process of products, those are very undaunting, and we work with them to help them clear those hurdles.
Now, we understand you made trade visits this year to both China and Vietnam. China in particular is a huge market.
It is a very, very huge market. It's very dominating within the entire world structure. And today I met with people from Brazil who are here specifically because they're reading about the drought. They want to know what is available for the international marketplace from the United States. What is it that these states are doing to mitigate that problem? And we asked them, where is your corn going in Brazil? Mm-hmm. 50% of the corn in Brazil is going to China. Those are the competitors for U.S. corn. And in some cases, we have to find those niche markets within China, even though it's a huge economy. Let me give you one example. When I was there, 2 years ago, Mr. Shen came here to the United States. He and I seemed to get along pretty good. He is the president of Shanghai Dairy Group, That is the identified group that China recognizes in southern China, where you will go to get educated, like not unlike what Don is doing, educated on dairy and how you provide a good dairy farm for China. We signed a letter of intent. We're the preferred provider of equipment, services, supplies in the state of Wisconsin. And somebody said, one little dairy farm. And I said, yeah, and they do $95 billion worth of business. Last year, Shanghai Dairy Group marketed $200 million of alfalfa hay that came from the United States. So these are the kinds of connections that we work hard to develop. And then we find the people here that can provide the products they're looking for.
What was the value of our agricultural products last year in Wisconsin?
Last year, we exported about $2.4 billion worth of agricultural products. This year, we're up higher. In fact, in the first 6 months of this year, over the first 6 months of last year, which was 2011 was a record year, we were up 5%. That doesn't sound like a big increase. But the U.S. as a whole is down 4%. So we are 9% better than the U.S. in exports, and we have now moved from, as you rank states in dollar values of exported commodities, we were 17th. Last year we moved to 16th. With the first six-month numbers this year, we are now 14th in the United States for states ranking for exports. So you can see we're moving up and we're becoming more involved in the international marketplace.
Secretary of Agriculture Ben Brancel for the state of Wisconsin. Also Tim Butke, he is a farm loan expert with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank. And Don Radke of North Central Technical College's Ag Center of Excellence. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back to talk about the drought right after this.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guests, Ben Brancel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Don Radke, the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence, and farm loan expert Tim Butke. He is the Senior Business Relations Manager with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank in Wausau. And in just a half hour, Secretary Brancel will be giving a presentation entitled Central Wisconsin Agriculture, Tapping into Global Markets for Jobs. That's right across the hallway from us here at the UW-Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement. That's the corner of 7th Avenue and Stewart Avenue on Wausau's west side. It is free and open to the public. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Gentlemen, let's talk about the drought. Corn crops, we hear, have been hurt really bad in the southern half of the state and in the Corn Belt all across the country. Ben Brancel, how bad has it been for Wisconsin farmers?
Well, it's been a pretty tough year for our Wisconsin farmers, but every farmer is impacted differently. If you're a cash cropper who has crop insurance, you are impacted differently than a cash cropper that does not carry the insurance. If you're a livestock producer that raises your own crops, you are impacted differently than the livestock producer who purchases all of their feed commodities. So every farm is impacted differently, and that's why one single solution does not address the whole issue.
What has your experience been in north central Wisconsin, Don?
Ours at the Ag Center of Excellence, we've actually been very fortunate this year. We've gotten enough rain. We've actually taken four cuttings of hay off. We're looking at taking our corn silage off just after Labor Day. Yields look like they should be between that 16 and 20 ton to the acre on corn silage. You get to the southern part of the county, it doesn't look as well. It's a lighter ground and stuff, so it's different in different spots.
You know, like I told you before the show, I live just south of the Lincoln County line, and there's a farm field near my house where the corn, I swear, is 12 feet tall. I've never seen anything like it. So I guess we kind of lucked out in the northern part of the Corn Belt here.
Yep. We're fortunate to get the amount of rain that we get and, you know, when we needed it.
And Tim Butke, farmers coming to you, are you getting more requests for loans, more concern because of the drought?
Well, I wouldn't say more requests for loans because of the drought, perhaps because of a little bit of a dip in the milk price this summer. We're kind of at a low precipice right here, and we know it's going to be ratcheting up. The bigger question, I think, that a lot of dairy producers are asking right now, even if they have adequate corn and beans on hand, they're going to say, can we justify running beans through my cows that I could be selling on market for $15 or $17 a bushel? Milk price is not at that point where you can really justify that, you know, even if you're growing your own. There is a price to that. So.
Well, what is it going to mean for dairy farmers? Many of them do use corn to supplement their feed, and that corn is going to be more expensive.
Well, they're going to look for other alternatives, especially if they're buying on the market, and that's typical of conversations I have with people. There are other feedstuffs that you can use in exchange for those things, some wheat substitutes, you name it. There are some things you can do. It doesn't necessarily have the same quality or energy impact that perhaps the traditional diet does for dairy cattle. But they will find alternatives.
But won't those substitutes go up in price too? It's
of
a law of supply and demand.
Of course. Know? You always look what you can. That's why farmers have become more and more educated on the markets overall, and they're getting pretty savvy on that to look around for alternatives.
And Ben Bransel, with the corn crop in tough shape all across the country, what does it mean for food prices?
Well, immediately it won't mean much for food prices. We get asked the question often, well, the grocery store prices are going to go skyrocketing, aren't they, right away? And I say, no, we haven't even got into a normal harvest cycle. You have not seen the impact on milk production at this point. Will it come? I'm certain there will be some adjustments in different locales. So food prices probably will be impacted, I would say, next year, midsummer, maybe late. What's happening right now is fellas that are trying to make sure they can stretch as much feed as possible to their very best cows are marketing some of their cows sooner than they would have, which means there's more market or meat. There's more meat going into the marketplace than less. So the price should be sliding downward slightly because of that kind of impact. So this is a long-term issue, not a short-term food issue.
Well, this is just anecdotal, but it seems to me that I've seen the price of meat go up about 20 or 25% over this past summer, in the grocery store.
Yeah, and some of that is not due to drought. If somebody is telling you that's due to drought, that is not accurate. It may be because the feed commodities available a year ago were in a little shorter supply, and corn prices actually went up way before there was any drought. Last year, we were getting some pretty good corn prices. And so feeder calf, which is the calf coming off the beef cow going into the marketplace, was more expensive. So input costs went up several years ago, those being fertilizers and fuels and the seeds. And all of that drives through the marketplace. And ultimately, it ends up with the stomach of the cow, whether it's beef or dairy. And then in order for us to maintain a level of farming in the state of Wisconsin, those prices have to come up as well.
And Don Ratke, the courses at the Ag Center, are they taking things like the drought into consideration in what they teach would-be farmers, how dependent they are on things like the weather?
Well, they do discuss the different, like Ben was saying, changing your rations and stuff like that. One thing what we do at the college, because of the limitations we have and the amount of acreage we run, I run probably a higher corn silage diet than most people do. And the other thing what we try to do is we try to chop our corn silage higher to give it a higher grain content so we don't have to feed as much corn, in our rations. So there's different things, like Ben said, we can do.
How does that affect the cows? It sounds like it's less nourishing if you do that. But I'm not a farmer.
Well, instead of running as much fiber through, with the energy content and corn silage being higher, we don't have to purchase or put as much grain or grain byproducts through. So we're feeding them the same. It's just we're feeding it a little bit different way.
Okay.
And then we can adjust it by different commodities. We feed molasses. for energy. It's a different energy source. Some people will put small grains in, cereal grains, that the starch's availability is different than what it is for the corn. So you don't want all just corn grain byproducts. You want different ones that break down differently inside the cow's gut to be available.
I might make a comment here. The important thing is that the farmer makes sure they test for two things and two reasons. If you have really stressed crops, test for toxicity. Make sure there aren't things that are going on in that plant that you're harvesting.
That you might be feeding to your...
Yeah, that you would feed that cause you problems. The other one is test for nutritional value and then balance your rations accordingly. You don't always have to balance them with corn or alfalfa hay. Are those the preferable choices? Absolutely. But always balance your ration, and that's something that needs to be taught so that people know that they have flexibility and opportunities without always looking at the one basic or two basic commodities that they feed their cows.
Farmer whose corn crop has just been devastated by this drought, and there are some of them in Wisconsin, what can they do besides throwing up their hands and walking away?
I want them to start talking. I want them to talk to the people. If they have contracts and they're not sure they can fulfill their contracts, they better talk to those people that hold those contracts. Don't wait till delivery day and then say, oh, I got a problem. Go in early. Talk to their lending person. Talk about, if this is going to happen to me, where am I for getting lined up for next year's production? Because there always is a next year. There always is opportunities in the next year. The other thing they need to do is be able to communicate with their neighbors, their relatives, and others, because in some of those conversations, solutions will be found. In other conversations, they'll understand that they are not alone, that others are in similar situations, that have used resources, whether it's human health resources, livestock support resources, understanding the marketplace resources. Just make sure they're talking, and talk early. Talk often. Don't wait till it's the last minute when people are calling you up.
How has this weather affected our soybean crop? Soybeans are a little hardier, it seems, than...
Corn is made in July and soybeans are made in August. That's a rule of thumb. This year we got started so early with the growing season that people went in early. Things aren't working out the same, so soybean maturity started coming a little earlier than normal. But in most of Wisconsin, soybeans are in pretty good shape, although because they were stressed, the spider mite, which is a little bitty bug, it's mm-hmm. always out there. When plants are distressed, it thinks it's in heaven and it really goes to town. And
it actually covers your plants with like a web-like material.
Yeah, you have to be watching out and making sure you manage for those kinds of stress factors that happen in your crops.
Our ginseng crop was hit hard by a freak snowstorm. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. Mm-hmm. But it takes 3 years for ginseng to mature. How are ginseng farmers doing?
It takes 3 years to mature, but it takes 4 and 5 years to get the highest quality roots. So when they get impacted where their actual standability is hurt, that means down the road, 3 to 4 to 5 years, the kinds of crop they will be able to harvest and be able to fill in the marketplace is challenged. So we know that those kinds of things happen. We're working with our Asian buyers to let them know what, at least today, anticipated poundage will be. I know that the Ginseng Association and their brokers overseas are communicating regularly about long-term contracts, because they're not signing a contract for next year's delivery. They're signing contracts that will be delivered in 5 years from now. So there is a lot of interaction that takes place in the international marketplace before there is ever a sale made.
Tim Butke, have you talked to any ginseng farmers in your professional capacity who might have been hit by this snowstorm? And what do they say to you?
That was actually a couple of years ago. And, yeah, that's going to have a longer-term effect. It did cause some issues, certainly, with that particular crop. And but you know, the ginseng industry is interesting because it has the number of acres here in Marathon County is about half of what it was perhaps 10 years ago or so. There are a few pretty large producers that really you know, they have kind of a corner on the market at this point. There are a few smaller ones as well, but the last couple of years now they've done very well. The ones that have stuck in it, and they understand the marketing of it, and have had adequate crop to really be successful.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got to take another break. We have our guests, Agriculture Secretary Ben Brancel for the state of Wisconsin, Tim Butke, a farm loan expert, and Don Ratke, who is the herdsman for the Ag Center for Excellence at North Central Technical College. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to talk about land use conflicts on Route 51.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Ben Brancel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Don Ratke, the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence. And farm loan expert Tim Butke. He is the Senior Business Relations Manager with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank in Wausau. And in just about 15 minutes, Secretary Brancel will be giving a presentation entitled Central Wisconsin Agriculture Tapping into Global Markets for Jobs. And that is here at the Center for Civic Engagement, UW-Marathon County in Wausau. That's at the corner of 7th Avenue and Stewart Avenue on Wausau's west side. Gentlemen, I want to talk about land use conflicts because there's one that's in the news today, and I don't want to focus too much on this individual one except to give it as an example. We're talking about a large-scale dairy operation here, and we see this quite a bit whenever a new operation is planned. And we're seeing it right now in the town of Saratoga in Wood County, a farm being planned by Golden Sands Dairy. That's part of the Wysocki family of companies. It would cover 7,700 acres, a mix of agriculture and dairy, and house 3,500 milking cows. The development being fought by a group of local residents with the support of the town board, which first refused to grant a building permit for the facility, and now they've instituted a temporary zoning law that would block it. The town board is being sued by the dairy company. Here's a story I did on this subject for Wisconsin Public Radio yesterday. We'll listen to it and then talk about land use conflicts. The town of Saratoga board members are being sued by Golden Sands Dairy over a building moratorium that is delaying a proposed 7,700-acre farm that would house 3,500 milking cows. Last night, the town board members, in a unanimous vote, went even further and passed an interim zoning ordinance that would temporarily block the development. Jackie Willie, co-owner of Golden Sands Dairy, says she's disappointed.
It seems that this ordinance is specifically targeted at hindering our dairy, but it's also clear that its broad sweep is an attempt to halt all commercial or agricultural development in the town, and therefore it could have a negative impact on anyone wishing to develop their property in Saratoga.
The mega dairy is opposed by nearby residents who say the farm will hurt their property values. Spokesperson Nancy Cook says there are more than 400 opponents in her group.
The right to private property has never included the right to use property in a way that devalues the properties of one's neighbors or diminishes the overall quality of life in the community.
Cook says they're worried about pollution and the effect of high-capacity wells on the water table.
We fear the water quantity, the water quality changes. We are concerned about the pesticides, the pathogens, both manure waste and animal carcass contain pathogens.
None of the town of Saratoga board members would comment on the record or return our phone calls in time for this story. The DNR is holding two public hearings on the project tomorrow afternoon and evening at the Saratoga Town Hall in Wood County. I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And that piece ran yesterday. Those public hearings by the DNR are actually going on right now at the town of Saratoga. Ben Brancel, I'm not asking you to comment on this particular conflict and to, you know, get in the weeds here, but in general terms, we see this quite a bit with land use battles over what the media has referred to as mega farms, and you always have the not-in-my-backyard syndrome, it seems, with area residents. What can we do to minimize these conflicts, and is there really any way to do that?
Well, I'm glad you say we're not going to focus on this one particular instance, because not in my backyard is used often in all kinds. Ethanol plants trying to locate into a community. It's a land use challenge. You mentioned dairy farms. That's a land use challenge. One of the things that communities have to do is they have to think forward, and sometimes it's challenging. They have to be forward thinking about what kind of land use policies do they want to have in their township, and what kind of activities do they want to have taking place in their township? Because to focus your opposition on any one thing generally is not as effective as if you have a well-planned out process where you identify what you want, you put your residential information out there, you create the zoning laws and regulations that you need. And those that start late after the process has already started.
After a company has already bought the land and started the process, it's kind of late at that point to get the zoning in place.
Right, and they're going to have to take into consideration all the aspects of not just their own circumstance, but the neighborhood circumstance as well. And CAFOs, which is a confined animal feedlot operation, which DNR regulates and oversees, has some very specific requirements for farms to have to meet before they are permitted through the permitting process at the state level. And we have a livestock siting board that reviews issues of conflict. I have no idea if this particular case will ever end up in there. But the livestock siting will give you a guidance, both the farm, what mm-hmm. must you provide in order to advance, as well as to the local community. What can you ask for? What are information issues that are very important to you? So advanced planning is the really, really key to this whole issue of land use conflict.
We'll give you another example. It's particularly important in a drought year, high-capacity wells for some agriculture operations, particularly irrigation. In Portage County, there's a Class 1 trout stream, the Little Plover River, that has dried up repeatedly over several years, along with at least one shallow lake in Washera County. George Kraft is a hydrologist at UW Stevens Point. He says the high capacity wells used for irrigation are to blame. But yet, you know, we eat the farm products from those fields. How can we come up with a comprehensive plan for water use in sensitive areas like this that balance the needs of farmers, residents, and recreational users who might want to fish for trout?
Well, I know Georgia has a modeling plan or program that he uses to make evaluations. The fact of the matter is, though, there's not consensus that his model is the best one to be using, or if it's even an accurate one. The Little Plover, and I'm not defending the high capacity well, I'm just going back historically, the Little Plover River dried up way before there were droughts. And we've had other circumstances in our state where lakes have gone up and down. I remember when Lake Michigan, and I was in the legislature, people were saying, how are you going to get rid of the water in Lake Michigan? It's wrecking the shorelines and high-valued properties. We want something done. Several years later, people were concerned that water was leaving the lake too fast. So it's how do you manage the issue of water? And what science do you use to make these kinds of decisions? And how do you base your decisions on science? Because I'll have an opinion, and it could be 100% correct or 100% wrong. But I have an opinion, as everybody does, and they're all they can have their own opinions. The problem is when those opinions impact people without correct, accurate information, then that's really detrimental to the long-term success of a community.
Don Ratke, you were talking about large farming operations. Is that the wave of the future? I mean, is a small family farm really something of the past? And people who are going into agriculture and out of agriculture, are they pretty much going to have to focus their attention on working for a big operation?
No, I wouldn't say everyone has to do that. But a lot of it is has to do with lifestyle. You get the younger generation. They want to spend time with their families. If you're in a dairy operation, it's 7 days a week, 365 days a year. One of the unique things that we have at the Ag Center of Excellence, we have a robotic milker. That's some of the newest cutting-edge technology that's out there. There are farmers around the area that are putting them in. And some people say they won't work, and the ones that have them, they learn how to manage them, and they can get more time off and spend more time with their families. So you have the grazers that say that that's the ideal way to go. It's all in how you want to manage it and how you want to spend your time with your family and stuff. So to say everybody's going to be large farm, I would say no. But it's going to be harder and harder for the smaller farms, I think, to compete economically, depending upon how much time and labor they want to put in on their own.
1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with your phone calls right after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about a variety of farm issues with Ben Brantzel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, also Don Ratke, the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence, and farm loan expert Tim Butke. He's the Senior Business Relations Manager with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank in Wausau. Let's go to the phones right now. Ernest in Hayward, you're on Route 51 with our guests. Hello, Ernest.
Hello. About the high-capacity wells, you know, how can you plan for that and the science of it? The one thing that I never hear is what about a charge on the use of that water? That would be an easy way to collect the rent from the water from a high-capacity well.
And Ben Brantzel, you want to weigh in on that?
No, but I will. Everybody uses water, and in what way do they use water, and at what time is some water valuable and other is not? I would suggest that I use water in my home, even though we don't have a real large well, as do many of my neighbors. In aggregate, all of that water takes up space, and high-capacity wells, do they have an impact? Absolutely. Nobody is going to deny that they don't have an impact. I think what kind of impact is very, very difficult to ascertain with the science that we have presently.
In economics, so there's one thing that we know across the nation and the world is that water is underpriced, as all our natural resources are. So if government wants to obtain revenue, it seems to me that taxing the use and pollution of our natural resources is the obvious source of revenue.
Ernest, thanks so much for the phone call, and he is right, Ben Brantzel. Water is scarce around the world, and we are blessed to have a lot of it here in the Midwest.
Yeah, we live in an area which most of us don't recognize every day, and that is that we're surrounded by the largest freshwater lakes and streams anywhere in the world. If you dropped Wisconsin's land base anywhere in the world, you wouldn't find as much water as we have here.
We did a show, and I want to touch on this very briefly. In fact, we've only got a couple of minutes here, on the push for local food systems. There's a federal program. It's called Transform Wisconsin. It's actually tied into the health care reform law, the Affordable Care Act, and it's trying to stimulate or make a push for local food systems where school districts and marketplaces actually sell the products farm producers are producing in their own neighborhoods. Don Ratke, does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, but if they're looking at feeding a large population where the world population is going to double by 2040, just local food population isn't going to feed everybody. But now on a local basis, I know of places in Wisconsin where a beef producer will have an animal slaughtered and it'll go to a local school, and on the table it'll say this beef was produced at such and such a farm in the local area. I think there's a place for that, but as a wide scale for feeding our population across the United States, I don't think you're going to get enough production that way to provide for everybody.
Ben Brant, we need diversity in our agriculture. And local and buy local programs is part of that diversity. It's a valuable component of our overall production capabilities. And for those individuals in local communities that want to source product from the local producers, it is absolutely a viable way of approaching it. One of the things we do at our department, and I'll talk quite rapidly because we're wrapping up here.
We've got like 90 seconds, Ben.
we have individuals that will help farmers understand how to access that marketplace. We also have people that will help train schools how to find the products they're looking for.
And we are completely out of time. We could have gone on for another hour, I think. We want to thank today's guests, Ben Brancel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, Don Ratke, the herdsman at North Central Technical College's Ag Center for Excellence, and farm loan expert Tim Butke, the Senior Business Relations Manager with Mid-Wisconsin State Bank in Wausau. A reminder, Secretary Brancel is going to be giving a presentation entitled Central Wisconsin Agriculture, Tapping into Global Markets for Jobs in just a few minutes here at the UW-Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement. He will be speaking across the hall from our studios in the Sonnentag Room. That event is free and open to the public. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker and Crystal Waters. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Murray McLaughlin. Thanks for riding along with us on Route 51 today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.
Mopping face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal. Here's a song that is real. From a kid from the city to you. Hankies mopping the face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal. Here's a song that is real. From a kid from the city to you.